if my boys are doing something that is going to result in them needing a Band-Aid, I do not interject. I do not stop them. Because life is going to result in scrapes and scratches and bruises.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Hey, 18 Summers Tribe, good to see you again. This is going to be a special interview today. We're here with a very longtime business associate, friend, and confidant, Mr. Joey Coleman, best-selling author of a couple of different books. But we're not actually going to talk about some of the business expertise that he's taught us today. Joey, good to be here. Great to have you here. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you, Jim and Jamie. It is my pleasure. As you know, I am such fans of you two. I am such fans of the 18 Summers concept. And so when you reached out, I was honored at the invitation, and I'm looking forward to the conversation today.
Thanks, Joey. Well, as you know, 100 Days has made a huge difference. You've come in and personally worked with my companies, my real estate investment companies, with 18 Summers, and also done speaking coaching together. But we also have had a lot of deeper talks and meetings and conversations around family. And that's why I really wanted to bring you on today. Obviously, I can tout you all day long on the business consulting you've helped us so much with. What I like about you, you have some very potent one-liners that build around it. And I thought that would be kind of a fun thing to go into today, or what you and I have discussed about and actually used in family life.
Well, that sounds perfect. Yeah. Where should we dive in?
Biggest thing that I've learned, Joey, is a couple of one-liners. I want to share some of the one-liners that have really stuck with me and have whole lessons built around them. And one of the first ones we talked about, you know, going into the depths of family life regarding marriage, was the 90-10 principle. I remember you and I in a mastermind talking about 90-10. And why don't you explain it, and then we'll go into it a little bit more.
Yeah, so all credit for the 90-10 principle goes to my parents. My parents have been married, as of the time we're recording this, 49 years. And when I was in high school, which has obviously taken us back a little bit, I had an assignment for school where they said, go home and interview your parents and ask them what the secret to a successful marriage is. Now, as an adult, I realized how onerous of a question that was to put parents on the spot that way. But as a kid, I looked at my parents and I thought, well, they're the two married people I know the most. They might have some interesting thoughts on this topic. So the whole family sitting around, when I say the whole family, I'm one of seven kids. And so there's a brood of us around the table. And we're having this conversation, just our regular dinner conversation. And I said, Mom and Dad, I've got a homework assignment. And the homework assignment is, what is the secret to a successful marriage? And my dad says, Joey, the secret to a successful marriage is 90%, 10%. On any given day, you need to give 90% or 10% to the relationship. I said, 90 or 10. And Mom said, yeah. And it depends on the day. Some days you're going to give 90. Other days you're going to give 10. Some days, both people in the couple are going to be giving 90, which creates 180% marriage. But on some days, both people in the couple are going to be giving 10%, which gives you a 20% marriage. The goal should be to avoid the 10 and 10 days where you're each given 10% and to try as often as possible to give 90 so that if you're given 90, your partner can give 10. But if you're given 90 and your partner's giving 90, it's a fantastic marriage. And that really stuck with me because I think at the end of the day, being in a relationship, whether you're married or not, is challenging. When we enter into a relationship, we get the joy, the pleasure, the excitement of all the baggage that our partner brings to the relationship from all the previous relationships they've been in. And whether those are good or bad, they're coming with preconceived notions, preconceived expectations, ideas of what the relationship should be. And even though I've now been married for 10 years, even though my wife and I have been married for 10 years, we've known each other for 20 years, on an almost weekly basis, we're learning new things about each other, learning new things about the past, learning new things about how things happened that influenced how we react to things today. And so I found a lot of comfort in this 90-10 rule in that I try to wake up every day saying, I'm going to give 90%. Now, the other cool thing about the 90-10 rule is that it gives you permission to not give 100%. Because I know very few people, if any, who can give 100% commitment, focus, intentionality, empathy, love, care, concern, all day, every day, 24/7, 365. So if you think about, well, if I'm only going to have to give 90% today, it gives you a little bit of permission if you don't hit the mark every time. Not an excuse, but a little bit of permission not to beat yourself up if a conversation doesn't go the way you wanted. If you forget to do something that is normally your responsibility in the household, and it's like, oh, I forgot to do that this morning, but you know what? I'll do it tonight, or I'll do it tomorrow morning, and kind of that'll be part of my 90% tomorrow.
Yeah. Wow, I love that, Joey. And I do know you reference it a lot when you talk to people newly getting married or thinking about getting married. I know that you...
Joey's my famous cliff notes. I'm like, my friend Joey talking with
next and you to do. You definitely do. One thing that I hear too, as you say that, the brood sitting around the table, all of you boys at that table that day, is that I'm thinking about our own big boys and how maybe I need to have that same conversation with them and say, you don't ever have to be 100%. I mean, I think that we probably demonstrate that.
We've done it in other ways, but we could be more clear.
But to specifically say, like, when I hear you say that, Joy, I mean, and we've even had talked about this concept before, but to hear you say it in that way, like, it literally means that you wake up every day with a little bit of a pass. Like, you don't have to be 100% today or tomorrow or yesterday. And we can, and I really love the flexibility in that. I think it's important to share that with our spouse. And then also from that top roll down.
Yeah, I totally agree, Jamie. And I am such huge fans of your children, and in particular, your two oldest boys, who I've had the pleasure of getting to know over the years. Your youngest kids, I've had less time with them overall because they're younger. But I think it's really hard to be a parent. And I think the reality is we've had parents on the planet for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And yet here we are in 2021, and there's no set guide to, like, here are the five great principles to be an amazing parent. Because you talk to different parenting experts or different parents who are just parents, and they will tell you sometimes completely different approaches. Yeah. One thing that I've found to be true, though, is our kids, as a general rule, sweeping statement, want to please their parents. And if our expectation as a child is that we have to do 100% to please our parents, it's really easy when one thing slips to go, well, I'm not going to get an A+ on this. I'm not going to get 100%. So I might as well just go do whatever I want. It's like, it's been ruined. Yeah. And this idea of the calendar resetting every time the sun comes up in the morning and the goal being 90% as opposed to 100% creates permission, frankly, for toddler outburst. It creates permission for mid-grade, middle-aged kids' hormones. It creates permission for what my dad used to call when we were growing up, the teenagery, which in a lot of families goes into the mid-20s, let's be honest. So it just gives a little bit of grace and a little bit of ease, which I know I personally couldn't have been told enough. Even though my parents told me, in the back of my head, that desire to please, that desire to be a good kid, that desire to listen to mom and dad, or if you come from a Judeo-Christian background, to honor your mother and father, was getting hit all the time at school, in the books, at church, whatever it may be. A little bit of grace was a really nice permission to be human.
I like that.
Well, I remember too, and not taking that pressure off, we could say easily to our kids, hey, let them fall apart and they'll come back together. But I used to put that 100% pressure on. And me and Jamie would get in a disagreement. I'd be like, oh my gosh, our kids saw us have a disagreement. And she'd say, well, 90-10, you're having a tough day, or we fell apart and we brought it back together. That's the example we want to set.
Exactly.
And that was an important one for us to use this 90-10 when we talked about it. Our kids have seen us have disagreements, but they've seen us come back together. And we felt if they weren't a part of that, as you know, we try to involve our family in deeper conversations of relationships, money, personal development, history. We find like they don't have that 100% thing going into their own relationship saying something's wrong. I never saw my parents fall apart and bring it back together. Right. And that was a really important lesson that, you know, I think the two of you definitely taught me.
Yeah, no, and I love that idea also of having honest conversations in front of your kids and letting your kids know you make mistakes. I mean, I had a conversation, our boys are 5 and 8. And I had a conversation with our 8-year-old the other day where I basically said, hey, I didn't show up as my best self. And because I didn't show up as my best self, it kind of gave permission for him to realize, hopefully, even dad doesn't do it right all the time.
So actually, Joey, speaking of the F word, one of the things I was thinking this morning was how you are always so genuinely interested in other people and you're so genuinely calming and you're just such a giver. And I know that's where that 100 days comes from. And I was thinking this morning when I was thinking about our conversation, I'm like, honestly, I feel like Joey could tell someone to go fuck themselves and they would say, oh, thank you.
Oh, yeah. That's so kind of you. I don't know that I could actually pull all that off, but I appreciate it.
I don't know if that's 100 days or defense attorney days. I think
could be either. I don't know.
Joey has such a delivery and such a kindness and just such a knowing of how to serve people and get into their groove that I think he could find the right way to tell anyone to F off. And they would be like, that's a great idea. I should totally F off. Because that's how I feel about all the ideas we get from you. Not the F word, but that I'm like, wow, how did Joey like read my mail and know right what we needed? So.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, it's interesting. Jim alludes to it. You know, my background, my career has been crazy eclectic. I was a criminal defense lawyer. I worked in the White House. I worked for the CIA and the Secret Service. I sold promotional products. I taught at the postgraduate level. I've given speeches. I've been a consultant. I've done a bunch of random crazy things. And most people look at my career and they're like, oh my gosh, this guy can't hold a job, which there may be some truth to that. But the reality is all of those jobs taught me about the human condition. And what I try to do, and boy, as a follow-up from our 90-10 conversation, if I can hit 90% on this, I feel like I am getting an amazing, amazing score, is that we're all doing the best we can. Yeah. Even when someone is showing up in a way that is completely disgusting and abhorrent and pushing all your buttons and triggering you, we have a tendency not to realize that that might be the best they can offer today. Their 10% might be all they can give. And so my thought is if I try to go through the world giving my 90 all the time, if I find myself in a place where I'm giving 10, maybe someone will be a little understanding. And it helps me to also recognize that if I'm given 90, I only need 10 from them for it to be a great conversation. Instead of going in and saying, well, I'm giving my 50 and you better be giving your 50. You know, it's not a 50-50 deal. It's a 90-10 deal.
Yeah, I love that.
Which is why you guys are such good friends, because you show up with that joke. Joey's compliments and it's like, I better tell
you. It just works.
That joke's just as much as me, though. And that's why I love him. So.
So speaking of being dads, Joey came, you came and stayed with our family, you and your beautiful wife and lovely children. And one of the things you brought with you, besides just a wild, ruckus time, which we absolutely loved every day, was best and weirdest.
Which has become world famous. I mean, this thing has spread like Johnny Appleseed. I kid you not, on podcasts, on meetings we've been to, on world adventures. There is best and weirdest going on from Coleman Seeds all over the place, just so you know, which I think
You have. I'm so glad to hear that. All credit, as is the case with all of my interesting, great ideas, they come from someone else. There's no such thing as a new idea at all as Genesis. This one, all credit goes to my younger brother, Casey, and his amazing wife, Amy. We were having dinner with them years ago with their kids, and our kids are basically the exact same age. They have 3, we have 2, but their oldest 2 are the same age as my oldest 2. And we sat down to dinner with them, and this was probably... this might have been 4 or 5 years ago. It was a while ago. And they said, what was your best, worst, weirdest to my niece? And I was like, wait a second, before we go any further, what helped me understand? My brother said, what was the best part of your day? What was the worst part of your day? And what was the weirdest part of your day? Now, what's interesting is the kids on their own evolved it more to best, weirdest, because in their view, there aren't a lot of worst parts of the day. But we in our family, we continue to call it best, worst, weirdest because we want to give permission to share a worst if they have a worst. And sometimes that gives us incredible insight to how the smallest of things could have seemed really big to them. and qualify as a worst. But lots of times, to your point, they gloss right over the worst. They just do best weirdest. And what I love about best weirdest is it allows you to know what was the highlight in their eyes. We were playing best worst weirdest one time at a restaurant on the river in Melbourne, Australia. We had had an incredible time. I was there with my wife, Barrett, my two boys. My mom was along for the trip. I had speaking engagements in Australia. And we were sitting having this epic Italian dinner on the water. An amazing, amazing day. We had been to the zoo. We had gone on these kinds of adventure drives. We had done incredible, incredible things. We were on vacation. We were having a blast. And we were sitting there and we said, all right, at the end of the night, best, worst, weirdest. And my oldest son said, best was definitely that ice cream cone I just ate. And I'm thinking to myself, are you kidding me? We are literally on the other side of the world. We are on the other side of the world. We've done all the quote unquote adventurous things you're supposed to do with kids. And we've seen the things, and we were at the aquarium and the zoo and all this. And it's the ice cream cone. Are you kidding me? But in that moment, I realized lots of times as parents, we think that the experience has to be epic to register with our kids. And where I learn from my boys all the time, literally all day, every day, is that the little things can be the best part of the day. And the weirdest piece of it also lets you have fun and laugh. Like that, often the thing going wrong gets rebuilt as weirdest. Wasn't it weird when we missed our flights? Wasn't it weird when we showed up at the hotel and they didn't have a room for us? Whatever it may be. And so I'm hoping, let's check back in a decade plus to see if it worked. I'm hoping that I'm conditioning my boys that there actually aren't that many worsts. Yeah. Like a worst is something, you know, you alluded to it earlier, Jim. I used to be a criminal defense lawyer. And one of the things I always used to say when somebody would say, oh, we've got a problem, I'd say, okay, stop right there. I've got two questions for you. Number one, did anyone die? Well, no one died. Okay, good. Because if somebody died, that's epic. That's tragic. We got to get on this. I said, number two, did someone go to prison for the rest of their life without possibility for parole? Well, no. And I was like, well, then we actually don't have a problem. We've got a hiccup that we can deal with. Those two things, it's really hard to unwind. It's impossible to unwind to death. It's impossible to unwind prison with no hope for parole. But all these other hiccups that happen in our life, hey, we might have a situation we want to work at, something we want to resolve, but it's not really a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And weirdest for us has definitely been, it's like the combo of worst and weirdest. I'll tell you one that sticks out for me. I know you and I have talked about this. It, like you said, it gives them permission to talk about a tough part of their day. Worst and weirdest has kind of been combined. But one that really sticks out is we stuck to this like glue through the pandemic. And as you know, we were at home like everyone else. And being in this pandemic, I remember in that first week, my Maggie saying to us, it was really weird to go see Granny and Poppy and not be able to run over and give them a hug and just drop off their groceries with all the cleaner stuff you guys had on. So that brought up some really big conversation. Not only, this is from Maggie, who was 5 at the time, was the incubator to have bigger conversation with our teens and all this, like, hey, this is weird. This is strange. We don't know. None of us have gone through this, but that just that a moment to give her that chance with the microphone, it opened up lots of conversation. We've had many of those, but that's one that just sticks out by doing this. I mean, there's been so many good conversation starters from that.
I know. It's great. I mean, all of our teens, it just really gives you a perspective into where they land. Now, Joey, when you were mentioning we've got a problem, you know, that really reminded, you know, and it's like, okay, so we have a problem. Or is somebody dying? Is someone on fire? Is somebody bleeding? Like, do we really have a problem? Or do we have a weirdest or do we have a worse? So talk to us about Band-Aids versus stitches.
Now, in the interest of full disclosure, this one is not necessarily fully adopted by the Coleman household. And what I mean by that is my wife is less excited about this parenting approach than I am, which I think is the case in many families. You know, the one parent may have a different philosophy than the other parent, but my wife, Barrett, has been kind enough to allow me to continue to pontificate about this idea, even though she may not be a huge fan of it. As I mentioned earlier, my boys are 5 and 8. We are in the phase right now of life, which I refer to as stitches versus Band-Aids. And my principle behind this is, if my boys are doing something that is going to result in them needing a Band-Aid, I do not interject. I do not stop them. because life is going to result in scrapes and scratches and bruises. And I never wanted to be the kind of parent who's running around with my boys with pillows or bubble wrap, catching them from falling. Because if you do that while they're growing up and they make it all the way to where they graduate high school, they leave home, they get out in the world, you're in big trouble when the consequences are much greater. So my theory is stitches versus Band-Aids. If it's going to create stitches, I will interject. I will say, hey, climbing up on that rock, if you fall off onto these other rocks, there is a good chance that you're going to cut open an arm, cut open a leg, and we're going to need stitches. Not that stitches are bad. You just need to understand you have transitioned from something where the consequence is a Band-Aid to where the consequence is a stitch. And that was a higher level of concern. So that's stitches versus Band-Aids. Now, what's interesting is very soon we are going to be transitioning to stitches versus plaster. Now, stitches versus plaster, the rules change. If they're doing something that's going to result in a broken bone, I will interject. If it's going to result in stitches, I'm not going to say a word. Now, I don't want my boys to get stitches. And ironically enough, we got our first trip to the ER about 2 weeks ago with our five-year-old. And yay, woohoo! And we ended up with stitches. Yeah, exactly. You know, check that merit badge from being a parent. We resulted in stitches. But what was hysterical about it is, I mean, obviously, I'm super happy that my son's okay. But it's become something that we talk about now. So one of the things I say with my boys all the time is, scars are proof that you made a choice that had consequences. Now, sometimes we make a choice and we're not aware of what. I believe every choice has consequences, but often it's really hard to see what the consequences of our choices are until much, much later. Stitches are a really fast feedback loop on a choice having adverse consequences. And so as we think about moving from, you know, the stitches versus Band-Aids to the stitches versus plaster, and eventually we'll end up at the final rule, which is plaster versus casket. Well, I will interject if their life is in danger, but I will not interject if they're going to fall out of the tree and break their arm. Why? Because you're probably going to break bones in this lifetime. You're probably going to get stitches, and you're certainly going to get a heck of a lot of Band-Aids. I just want to do my best to try to position those significant consequences into an age-appropriate time frame. And I think that's where, at least as a parent, I'm trying to do my best to let my boys understand the feedback loop of consequences and that sometimes the risk is worth it. If the risk is a Band-Aid, jump.
Yeah, right.
If the risk is stitches, well, it depends on what the payoff is. It still may be worth the jump. If the risk is plaster, well, it depends on what the payoff is. It still may be worth the plaster. If the risk is a casket, don't do it, kids. That's not what we want to do. So trying to instill that idea in them at a young age.
Absolutely. One thing too, that, you know, calculated risks are huge. And so that's really what you're teaching them, these natural consequences, calculated risks. We have, as you know, big thrill seeker boys, which brings me great pleasure because I was a chicken and I still am. And I think that's all wrapped up in the baggage that I arrived here in. But I love watching these children make crazy calculated risks. And I just always think, gosh, are we leading them well? Or are we just like setting them up? And I think time and time again, when I see that they're addicted to these experiences, but not addicted to drugs. They're seeking thrills in these ways, like you're saying. They kind of look and they're like, okay, the sign says if I jump off this bridge, like it isn't a crocodile space. I looked for the crocodiles first. They're not there. I'm going to jump and I'm going to quickly move out. And then I'm going to look before my friend jumps. This is actually.
I was going to say, this doesn't sound like the voice of reason. This sounds like the voice of experience, Jamie. Yeah, there's a fine line between those two.
I actually took Joey there. We were there together in the Keys one meeting, okay, Joey. You remember them.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's not an experience I would ever be comfortable with doing myself. Although when I see my children doing that and we walk through it, like, okay, well, make sure you check first. Okay, is it deep enough? Are there crocs actively? You know, and you go through this list, just like you're saying, and it's a calculated risk. And I watch them do these things and they realize time and time again, I can get this high or get this thrill and I can still feel good afterwards. I can still be okay afterwards. And if they get injured, then they learn the next time to be more careful or more cautious or more. And what's interesting is these guys have had lots of stitches and concussions, but we've never had a crocodile attack or anything super crazy, you know?
To clarify, this was done by all the kids. They had said they're, it's not like the Indiana Jones scene where they're on the wood bridge. Like,
sure.
Now we're revealing our parenting style. Somehow I'm the loose one and everything crazy happens on my
watch. You're definitely more courageous on certain things where I'm a chicken.
Well, and to me, that's often the sign of a great partnership. When in some areas, you're the one that's more the risk taker and your partner is more conservative. I think the best relationships are the one where those toggles slide depending on the topic. If you go through a relationship, and I have a lot of friends who have really struggled in their marriages because one parent feels that they always have to be the one that says no. And my theory is I want my boys to hear no from their mom and their dad. I want them to hear yes from their mom and their dad, because to me, it's unfair to put all of the no's on one partner, or frankly, to put all of the yeses on one partner. That's equally unfair. And so that idea of depending on the situation, we're adjusting it. I think that makes good sense. One of the things that I love, Jamie, about that check for the crocodiles and then go ahead and make the jump is, in my experience, the most memorable moments of my life. The moments of my life where I, for lack of a better way of putting it, up-leveled to either another understanding of community, another income bracket, another new adventure, another possibility, came from my willingness to take a risk. And if we go through life thinking, well, it's always got to be calculated, and I always need to know all the potential outcomes before I can move forward in a situation. First of all, you never actually know all the possible outcomes. And second of all, I want to hopefully raise my boys to be the kind of people that are willing to make an educated guess, to say, well, I've factored in these three or four things, and it looks like we can make it work. So I'm going to try it. Mm-hmm. And it brings up another conversation we regularly have at our house at the dinner table, which is, what did you fail at today? I want my boys to have daily failures. I know as an adult, I have daily failures. And we try to answer the questions honestly, too. I was not as kind to mommy as I could have been in that conversation. Or daddy said he was going to be in to help set the table at 5:30 and his client call ran long and he didn't come into 5:45. And that's not acceptable because daddy had made a promise to mommy that he would be in to set the table. And he broke that promise. So that was a failure. And I've asked mommy for forgiveness. Now, by the way, my wife, it's not that that was an epic failure. She needed, but I want the boys to know, like, look, when you make a commitment, you need to live up to your commitment. And if you fail, apologize, acknowledge it, and do better next time.
Yeah, I love that. If we do that, it might be a longer dinner. But all joking aside, that's one thing we always say is, you know, a sincere apology can make a 10-minute issue instead of a 4-day catastrophe.
Or a 40-year nightmare.
Yeah.
I was in a conversation recently with some people who I love very dearly that were sharing something that had happened, I'm not making this up, 15 years ago. And the wound was still as raw as if it was yesterday. And I found myself leaving the conversation and my wife Barrett and I were talking and I said, it breaks my heart to see that 15 years later, that is still being brought up. I think that the way we avoid relationships over-indexing on
hysterical and historical, I like that,
is by addressing it as close as possible to the time the thing happens. Now, I recognize that sometimes you can't address it in the moment. Either we're so caught off guard or we're so upset. What Barrett and I have, my wife Barrett, is a kind of an understanding that we can say, this is incredibly frustrating and I want to talk about it. And we're going to talk about it sometime in the next week. And I will come back to you with when that will be. It's not going to be right now. It's not going to be in an hour. And I'm, as the talker in the family, the extrovert in the family, I'm usually one who's like, let's just sit down and sort this out. Let's chat it up a little. Let's fix it. And sometimes my wife is like, not looking for a fix right now. Not looking for a big conversation right now. Want to come back to this later. So we reserve the right to come back to it later at the other person's desired time frame. And I have found that that can diffuse situations so dramatically, because it also gives the person who doesn't want to address it time to step back and say, why was that so upsetting to me? Why was that situation so triggering to me? And I request these delays as well. Hey, this has nothing to do with you. It has everything to do with this other thing that you didn't even know about, but it's just leaking out into our relationship. And I'm sorry. And that's not how I want to show up. And now that I have a little breathing room to sit back and go, God, that had nothing to do with anything with her and everything to do with stuff I was bringing to the table that she didn't even know about.
Yeah, which we all go through. And I love how you give a little space to be able to address it in a better way.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. I mean, honestly, again, this is an easy conversation. We've had them in your house, in my house, on vacations and adventures on together, on Zooms, which I prefer in person. Hopefully we'll get to see you again soon. But the 90-10 principle has been huge for us. Best and weirdest to spread around the world.
Our kids really, even their friends.
The teams look forward to like, Mr. Jim, Miss Jamie, are you going to do best and weirdest tonight? So they're into it. And even stitches versus band-aids. I mean, we all work from home right now. And that one thing, like if Jamie's on an interview or consulting a mom in need, I know I'm not going to go in and bother her if they scrape their knee. Now, if there's a fillet and we got to get to the ER, that's probably a thing. But honestly, that one thing is saying, okay, don't interrupt me unless there's stitches. That's been such a good thing for at home. So again, these three things work huge. We use them. They came from you. I always try to give you credit, which I know you're not looking for, but I like that story. So I'd love to end with a question, you know, we ask on the end of all of our episodes, the 75-year-old self. You know, we all say, this is what we'd say to our 21-year-old self. I needed more wisdom than that during the pandemic, especially. So I said, what would my 75-year-old self say to me now? So, you know, 75-year-old Joey, still trucking along, still got a full head of hair, dazzling his family. You know, what advice do you think 75-year-old Joey would give to Joey today or to other people today?
You know, I'm really fortunate that my father actually turned 75 this year.
Oh, look at that.
And so I can kind of relate to a 75-year-old because I live in the same home as my parents. And so I am around a 75-year-old literally on a daily basis. And one of the things, I'm going to borrow something that I'm seeing from him that hopefully I can start doing now in my late 40s and carry it through 75. I think my 75-year-old self would say, Joey, 99% of the things that are occupying your thoughts on a daily basis are going to be completely insignificant in a decade.
Wow. That's
the 1% is where you need to put your effort. And what is the 1% of things that are coming across your to-do list, your email inbox, the voicemails, the conversations with your partner, the conversation with your kid? What is the 1% of things that actually matter? Focus more on those. Give more intention to those. Give more thought and care and concern to those. My hope is that at 75, I'm barely halfway done with my life. My plan is to live to be a minimum of 150, if not older. And so my hope is that I can piggyback on that going forward and see the compounding effect of decades, as opposed to worrying about the, what about today's to-do list? What about the thing that needs to be done by Friday? Now, what about the thing that I'm actually going to care about 30 years from now, 40 years from now, 50 years from now?
Love that.
And Joey, something that's just sustaining, as you're talking about, like those things that really matter decades from now. What I've heard you say multiple times through this conversation is lessons that you either observed or been told or learned from your parents and their relationship. And I think to get to a place in which you are standing on their shoulders, you are taking what they taught you, and then, like you said, multiplying that, you're creating that legacy. And so often what we do as parents, sometimes we do it completely different because we wanted it to be different. And then sometimes we just make it better. And I just want to commend you. I really admire and you know, I don't want to say jealous, but how beautiful that you get to come from a place of being able to withdraw this wisdom and really grow from that place. So thank you for sharing with us today.
Oh, Jamie, well, I so appreciate that. And, you know, to that point, if I may, I recognize how incredibly lucky, privileged, blessed, fill in your modifying word, and all of them apply, my life has been. And my hope is that by talking to other people who I admire the way they show up in their relationship with their partner. I admire the way they interact with their child. A lot of the things we talked about today are things I learned from my parents and my siblings. I have just as long a list of things that I learned from couples I admire, like you two, or children that I've seen interacting with their other siblings that I admire, or friends or mentors or colleagues. And my goal is just to always be a lifelong learner. And if I have the ability to hopefully synthesize some things and send it forward to my boys and to other people, well, then I like to think maybe I've done my job. I believe as humans, our job is to try to leave the planet a better place than when we arrived. That applies to the planet globally. That applies to our communities nationally. It applies to our communities locally. And most importantly, to the humans that we interact with.
Love it.
Thank you so much, Joy Coleman. Where can people learn more about you? Get your books.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. Yeah. So the best place to find me online, Jim and I joke about this all the time. I am not on the Twitters like I am on Twitter, but I never tweet. I never do stuff on Instagram. I never do stuff on social media. The best place to find me is joeycoleman.com. That's J-O-E-Y, like a baby kangaroo or a five-year-old. Coleman, C-O-L-E-M-A-N, like the camping equipment, but no relation. Joeycoleman.com. There's information there about my current book, my next book, the speaking that I do, the consulting I do, et cetera, et cetera. And I thank both of you so much for a really fun conversation. And I thank everybody who was kind enough to listen in. Hopefully you found one or two things that you might want to experiment with. So here's my challenge to all the listeners. Just for giggles, tonight, when either sit down for dinner with your family, or for some reason sitting down for dinner with your family because of ages or schedules or that doesn't work, maybe it's a commute driving your kids to a practice or a school, or maybe it's tucking them in bed, give the best, worst, weirdest a try. Kids love this question. And it doesn't need to be, oh, we do it every single night. Because I'll be honest, we sometimes forget to do it. But try it. And after you ask the question, go 100% into listen mode. Don't worry about commenting. Don't worry about suggesting. Just make it a very much like, hey, what was the best part of your day? What was the worst part of your day? What was the weirdest part of your day? Try to record those things. And then over time, see if you can discern any patterns or any trends based on the answers. I think you'll find it fun.
Oh, yeah. I agree wholeheartedly. We can support that 1,000%. So, Joey, always a pleasure. And we hope to have you on again soon, bud.
Oh, thanks, friends.
Take care.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.